You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumour.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes. What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes. Yeah, minutes. It's not an XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. Online and offline privacy are becoming quite an issue these days. What with identity theft growing at an alarming rate, even the Australian Tax Office has a page on their website entitled Identity Theft and Your Tax File Number. Recent studies indicate that more than 7 million people in the United States alone have been victims of identity theft. That averages out to nearly 3.4% of the American population that have fallen victim. So what's to say it's not happening here in Australia? There are really two ways criminals can get our personal details. Firstly, they can attack institutions which house our details through day-to-day transactions, such as utility companies, financial institutions, government, and even retailers. Secondly, they can attack us by trying to trick us into giving them our personal details, known as phishing, or by installing small programs on our computers that capture our keystrokes and send them to the crooks via the internet. There's even concerns about online organisations such as Google, the world's largest and most popular search engine, about how it stores personal data and what personal data it collects knowingly and unknowingly to the user. Online safety should be everyone's first concern these days, and there's plenty of products on the market to help us stay safe. But the best defense we have is common sense. No amount of clever software can prevent identity theft, as ultimately it's the end user who clicks OK on the dialog box requesting permission to continue. Trusting your instincts is one of the best defenses you can have. If it looks and feels suspicious, chances are it is. Today on Tech Talk Radio, the panelists will share their experiences and recommendations when it comes to protecting yourself online. So if you don't know the difference between a virus and a Trojan, then be sure to stay tuned.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft announces the launch of the next generation of server technology. Google and the ACCC go head-to-head. Telstra looks down the barrel of a $16 million fine. Virgin sets to launch 3G. And a bridge is imported to help get digital TV in this country up and running. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Australia's competition regulator takes on Google, Sony under pressure from Nintendo sales, Virgin Mobile set for Australian 3G launch, volunteers needed to identify 1 million galaxies, and portable devices affect human memory. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Australia's Competition and Consumer Commission hit Google and Sensor subsidiary Trading Post last week with a landmark lawsuit. The legal action alleges misleading and deceptive conduct and breaches of the Trade Practices Act over sponsored links on the Google website. The row erupted over links listed by Google as search results, which are in fact paid advertisements or sponsored links. While the ACCC says consumers are being misled because there is no distinction between so-called organic and sponsored links, the move has angered Google and internet analysts who say they should have been consulted prior to legal action being launched. The ACCC wants Google to display a notice on its website admitting to breaches of the Trade Practices Act and for Google to implement a compliance program. Sales of Nintendo's Wii gaming console with its unique motion-sensitive controllers could top sales of Sony's PlayStation 2, making the Wii the biggest success in games console history. Nintendo president Satoru Iwata said last week that Nintendo had sped past Sony in market capitalization in June to become one of the 10 most valuable companies in Japan. Since its launch in November last year, Nintendo's Wii has outsold the Microsoft Xbox 360 and Sony's PlayStation 3 every month. Mr. Iwata said that Sony's PS2 sales of 100 million units is an extraordinary number, but that if Nintendo continued to expand the gaming population, that number could be exceeded. While Sony has shipped more than 120 million units of its famous PlayStation 2 games console, Nintendo has sold 5.8 million units of the Wii and aims to sell another 14 million during the current business year to March 2008. The sales figures were announced after speculation about the long-term viability of Sony's PlayStation 3 and its price point in the games console market. While the PS3 has an integrated Blu-ray disc player with a price tag to match, Sony intends to discontinue its 60GB model in favour of the 80GB model for $599 because of the economics involved in sourcing 60GB drives. Market analysts have expressed concern that the console is too pricey compared with the Nintendo Wii and Microsoft's troubled Xbox 360. Virgin Mobile now expects its new 3G phone network to switch on this month after the successful installation of several key support systems. Virgin's supplier, TriPoint Corporation, has finished implementation of a number of platforms, including storage arrays, and said that Virgin Mobile will commission the new systems by the end of July. The systems include HP Itanium servers and EMC mid-range storage arrays installed in Virgin Mobile's data centres. As part of the project, TriPoint also decommissioned some redundant equipment which had been used by Virgin to support business-critical systems. The Australian announcement comes after Virgin's success just 12 months ago in the United Kingdom, when a new enhanced suite of 3G-enabled services was made available. Virgin Mobile Bytes was extended to offer 3G services in the UK with unique music, editorial and video content. A new astronomical survey project called Galaxy Zoo is calling for enthusiastic volunteers to help examine far-flung galaxies. The Sloan Digital Sky Survey, or SDSS, is a project consisting of astronomers mapping large parts of our skies and has developed a unique system of photography using a camera mounted on a telescope at the Apache Point Observatory in New Mexico. The website galaxyzoo.org welcomes volunteers to the project and provides a quick tutorial on the correct way to classify galaxies. Approved volunteers are asked to classify each galaxy in a series of photographs as either elliptical or spiral, as well as which direction each galaxy rotates. While fairly straightforward for the human brain, the task of pattern recognition has traditionally been notoriously difficult for computers. With the help of volunteers, project organisers hope to achieve several years' worth of work within just 1 month. Interest in astronomical research was renewed in the mainstream media recently when astronomers said they had discovered the best evidence yet of water outside our own solar system in the atmosphere of a giant planet 60 light-years from Earth. Investigations showed the planet appeared larger at wavelength bands that corresponded to water, suggesting the substance was present in the planet's atmosphere. And considerable attention last week was focused on life before mobiles. Ian Robertson, a professor of psychology at Trinity College in Dublin, said that the boom in mobiles and portable devices that store reams of personal information has created a generation incapable of memorising simple things. A quarter of those polled said they couldn't remember their home telephone number, while two-thirds couldn't recall the birthdays of more than three friends or family members. The survey for Puzzler Brain Trainer magazine was conducted over 2 weeks and polled 3,000 people. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Optus decided to start metering their uploads like Telstra does, like Dodo does.
It should be moving in the direction of charging less for data and charging more for the speed of the connect. Because what's the point of having a really fast connection if you're going to use your monthly allowance in 5 minutes?
The poor old iPhone didn't quite survive. It had a bit of a crack in the glass on the front.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah.
Can you run Linux on it?
Bootcamp.
Not yet.
Because as I explained earlier, I think that's a necessity.
Yeah, but maybe it's not for that sort of use.
It's a telephone, for goodness sakes. Have you ever bought music online?
Yeah, I have, and I've been bitterly disappointed.
Really?
Yeah. 128 kilobits per second.
Which is disgraceful.
It sounds like absolute crap.
Well, I suppose it depends whether you like that sort of underwater metallic-y sound you get from the MP3s that you download.
Three-bedroom, brick-veneer house.
Yes.
And it's just one of your spares.
One of the spare houses.
Yes,
we,
a spare house.
Which we just allocated from
the Dr. Ron Ehrmeyer. That's why you're a doctor, because you have spare houses.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show that is Tech Talk Radio, wherever you might happen to be listening to us from, whether you're up in Queensland, whether you're in Western Australia, or even down here in the southern, cooler areas of Australia. Tad nippy at the moment, enjoying our winter respite, I guess. Dr. Ron joins us this evening, and Mark Diggins, good evening to you both. Do you remember your home phone number, Dr. Ron?
G'day, Andrew. I remember my home phone number. Yeah, I'm going okay, but there are some people that don't anymore.
That's right. Mm. I just hear you talking in the news there before about forgetting your home phone number from time to time. I plead guilty to forgetting my wife's mobile number because she's in a speed dial number in my mobile phone. So when someone says, what's your mobile number? I think, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't know. I can't remember. Mark, do you? How are you with phone numbers?
Yeah, no, I'm terrible. I just changed mobile phone numbers and I cannot remember it for the life of me. It's one of those ones that I didn't get to choose myself, so it's not even close to something I've had before. And
you probably haven't rung me yet, so I don't know what
don't
it
ring
is.
Myself. And I've had to actually put it on my PDA, because my PDA is a phone as well. I had to put it on the front screen so I remember it and can tell people.
I ask people at work what their phone number is and they say, I don't know, I don't ring myself.
It's tricky, isn't
it? How would I know what it is?
Mm. It's interesting, the love affair with mobile phones is still fairly, everyone likes them. There's a bit of talk in the mainstream media about it at the moment too, so,
It's a bit like sending emails to each other, and one person gives the other an email address and says, send me one so I can put you in my contacts.
Well, I can add you to my address book or something.
Call me and I won't answer it, but then I'll be able to put your number in my address book. In your phone.
Do you use the calendar, Mark, in your address in your mobile telephone?
Yeah, because I've got the PDA type one, I do, but I don't use it in previous versions of phones that have had calendars. No, they're not good enough, sort of thing.
They're not, are they? They're not quite. They don't quite cut it.
No.
Good to look up a date. See what day of the week it is, and that's about all.
Mm. It is changing though. I think we'll see some good calendaring things very shortly. But anyway, tonight on the show, we were going to have a guy by the name of Michel Lawrence. Yes. Michel, it's a boy's name, really. He's French. He was going to come in and talk to us about photography, but he double-booked himself and apologised profusely, and he will be next week to talk about that. We've rejigged a few things and all that sort of stuff. So if you're tuning in to hear Michel tonight, he will be in next week. He's under the threat of death. He had tickets for something, and he said, please, Mark, come in the following week. So, yeah, isn't it grace?
Oh, well, do we get the free tickets for next week or something?
I don't know. We'll have to see what he's...
what do you have tickets to? Now, I want to find out all about raw data.
Well, he was actually... We were using that today, actually, in at the office. The raw data files. Fantastic for fixing things after you've taken the photograph.
Yeah.
It used to be very limited in what you can do off a simple JPEG, but the raw files off your cameras is good. Now, I'm not going to steal his thunder, so you'll have to tune in next week to find out all about that sort of stuff.
Does he have any tips for which cameras to buy and what's good and bad and that?
He will. What to look for, yes.
Yeah, because I read the other day that megapixels isn't everything. Obviously, lenses come into play.
Well, but, yes.
There's a bit more to it than just megapixels as well.
And usability and battery life,
mm-hmm.
All sorts of things. Photo software that may come with your camera, because it's very important these days, so you can trick your photos and down-compress them and email them to your friends and things like that too. So
should be interesting.
Yeah, that's next week. Now let's talk about this week. There's a few emails in today. Streaming, we are streaming online. We've had a bit of a power glitch here in where we originate Tech Talk Radio from this evening, and things are slowly coming back up to stream. So
only just barely streaming. The Shoutcast and the iTunes stream should be okay.
Yeah, major power surge. Even you noticed it at your work, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I live just around the corner from where the server is and where this studio is, and the power went off about 10 to 6 for about a second.
But it didn't go off. It was more like a brownout or
that's
something.
Right.
And they're worse than
about a second, not even, and that was enough.
Yeah, just to spike network cards and do all sorts of things like that. So bear with us tonight if you're trying to tune in on the stream. Podcasting, though, podcasting's going fairly well. So if you're looking to subscribe, you can visit the website, which is now back online. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address if you'd like to send us an email, which several people did today. Peter Hatley in particular. Guys, yes, it's Thursday, but I'm finally listening to this week's podcast. That's good. It's like nice staying current, Peter, isn't it?
This is Peter from the VoIP shop.
That's one. He was. We were talking about green and things like that, and how to go a little bit green. We will do something on the show fairly shortly about staying green. Are you a green person at home, Dr. Ron? I think we discussed this last week. You don't subscribe to green power, do you?
I don't.
Is there a reason why?
I don't see...
You just don't know where the money goes? That's my problem.
This is it. I don't know what I'm going to get. Short-term value for money. And being the extremely cynical person that I am, people ring up or they knock on the door and they say, yeah, you just need to pay an extra $90 per electricity account.
Is it $90? Is it 10% or something like that?
I don't know what it is.
It's a bit like when people stick things in your car window in an intersection and say, oh, it's good.
Well, that's right. And I said, well, look, I subscribe to the theory, and yes, you're well-intentioned, I'm sure, but where am I going to see value for money? What is going to make me actually make the change? And I haven't been convinced yet.
I actually reckon go the other way. If it is 10%, make everyone pay 10% more, and then have the government enforce that they have X amount of green power done by a certain date.
Legislation. And, you know, they've got the money there's a radical concept.
I know, it's probably over-regulating and that sort of thing, but that's the way I'd rather everyone go it and you're forced to do it rather than a few people do it. Everyone has to do it, and then if the government enforces that, now you've got the money, it's coming in from every consumer, make sure you have it done by this date.
Have you got green power at home?
No, I don't. No, but I have. We did have it. Mm. We did have it. And when we rang up and grilled the appropriate telemarketer about it and said, where does it go? Well, the answers we got weren't that satisfactory, really. So it stemmed from that. But
Peter Hatley is using it.
He uses Jack Green. It costs no more, unlike others. However, the same price, 100% green power, is non-accredited. Evidently, it is still green. It's just from older sources. Pre-1993 sources can't get accreditation, such as the Snowy Hydro.
Oh, right, yep.
Completely green hydro doesn't burn carbon, but can get the certificate. I wish I could speak tonight. A certificate. Yes, so there you go. There's other alternatives out there apart from going down the electricity company option. But thank you, Peter. He did go on to... Yes.
I did a survey, one of those ones where they ring you up and, you know, one of these more legit ones, and they went through lots of questions like political parties and a few other charity things, and one of them was about green power. They said, do you know what green power is? And, you know, I basically gave my answer. And they said, do you know who runs green power? Because that's their sort of marketing name, Green Energy, I think it is, which is from Origin, have some ads on the television at the moment down here in Melbourne.
And billboards everywhere.
Yeah. And I sort of went through it, and they were asking questions about it. So I don't know if they were trying to find out why all their advertising's not working, or, you know, get a feel of understanding whether the consumer really wants it, and if they don't want it, why don't they want it, and that sort of thing. So, yeah, that was interesting that they're actually polling to find out about, you know.
It is. We're getting into this very environmentally green, carbon-friendly, not-so-friendly environment, and there's a lot of hype. We've got a political circus about to happen leading up to the federal election, so there'll be a lot of truths, untruths, spin, for want of a better word, which will be out there. But, yes, where do you go? It's a bit like broadband in this country. Who do you believe? Who do you turn to?
We've got some feedback from Perth in Western Australia. From Mike Jacobson.
Hello, Mike. Yes.
Yes. Have you got Mike's? I've got Mike's email right here. He says, in contrast to the emailer you read out in the last show, I find I listen to you via the podcast because you do supply a good roundup of Australian broadband and communications news, which I would otherwise miss out on. Don't stop. Cheers, Mike. Thanks very much, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. I've got another one here from Mike, too. He obviously was listening. He came across a story which...
Is this a potential hotspot? Is this...
Yeah, it could be. Well, thanks, Mike. We'll get on to that one later on in the show. Another one from Andrew P.
Hi, Andrew.
Just wading through 1307, and the first half was all politics and broadband. Boring, he says.
Oh.
Someone compared Korea and Denmark to Australia. Look at the map, you idiots.
I didn't see this email.
It's a very big place. Yes, you're right. Stop salivating and crowing at political snout feeding. It's disgusting.
Oh.
There you go.
Well, I think it's all, you've got to put things into context, don't you? We look at it, and there's something I read today about, you know, speeds and broadband speeds compared to other countries of the world. You know, in the country areas where people are still on dial-up, they'd be happy just to have 1.5 megabits per second, you know? So, you know,
it's like having a microwave, isn't it?
I'll pay it. Just give me broadband. Even if it's at 1.5, it's got to be better than the 56 I've got at the moment sort of thing.
I think we were saying last time we were on the show, Mark, a couple of weeks ago, that... There will be an upfront cost for a lot of rural subscribers.
$250, I think they were talking about the WiMAX installation.
To install WiMAX equipment. I think that's a very reasonable price when you take into consideration what actually has to occur, the equipment that's involved, the technical expertise of the people needed to install it.
Yep.
Then if you pay it, and you pay it, and that's done, and then you've got access.
Yeah, that's right.
Speaking of broadband news, if you're not interested in broadband, turn off now. If you're interested in wireless broadband, Hutchison 3's mobile service. This is city-centric communicator, telecommunications provider, has again moved to cut prices for downloads on its third generation data network. The company today announced new monthly plans ranging from $29 for 1 gigabyte of data to $99 for 5 gigabytes of data. Now, that is really good, really competitive. I don't know anybody else. I have to update the webpage now. Very competitive data over the airwaves, which is going to be good. I wonder why they did that. Do you reckon they have more capacity on their network to offer this, or is it going to be a bit of a free-for-all and whoever connects?
Well, you start looking at it. I mean, I was looking at it last year, probably late last year, it was about $100 per gigabyte with Telstra. Now, Telstra can always sell their stuff at a premium because it's on the Next G network, which is, you know, it's got better coverage than everywhere else. And with Hutchison, you've got it in 5 capital cities. So as soon as you step outside of that, you're onto GPRS, which is slower. And also, after the first, like, 10 megabytes of GPRS, you start paying $1.50 per megabyte.
Ouch!
Yeah, so be aware that if it suits you to be in Melbourne or Sydney or Adelaide or Perth or Brisbane, that's fine. But if you go to Hobart, yeah, not going to work. You're going to be paying a fortune for it, sort of thing. So it's not for everyone, and they have to be cheaper, Hutchison. But there's a huge difference between $29 for a gigabyte and $100 a gigabyte if you're just around your local capital city, and that suits you just fine.
At the moment, I'm on Hutchison 3 network, and I'm paying $5 a month for 10 megabytes.
Yeah, but that's because you're not on a data plan. That's just your average Joe Blow. You want to jump on the net and do it. If you
I want to get email and look at and use the web browser in the phone. So this is for the data plan.
This is for the data plans. Okay. Now, you've got to... Hutchison in particular have... There's sort of like 3 plans with Hutchison's. Now, as Mark made a very valid point, if you are not in a capital city, this is not for you.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're in just out of the metro areas of a lot of our national cities, it also is not for you, although despite the fact that their data cards are quite clever, you can tell it not to connect if you're in a roaming area, like on the Telstra network or something like that, because it will cost you a lot of money if you're roaming. But yes, there's 3 sort of plans. The first plan is a voice plan, which is what you're talking about,
so
there's no data component in it apart from a casual, I want to see the footy scores type sort of thing. Secondly, they have a data card system, which is a little card which plugs into your laptop via a USB or a express PCI slot in the side of your laptop. And thirdly, they have these new mobile devices, which is probably for you, Dr. Ron,
right,
where you can actually get this new X series data. So it's really a device which is made and geared and planned for data. And those ones are even cheaper, those plans, compared to their existing ones which are on at the moment.
Well, I might look at that because I've got an iMate Jazz Jar, which could be good for sucking down large volumes of
data. But I think there are some tricks. You obviously, check their website, check the dealers and all that. They only work on certain handsets based on HSDPA-type
handsets.
There's a bit of a deal going there. But anyway, just to give you a comparison, and not to turn it into a commercial, what used to happen was, for $29, you used to get 200 megabytes of data bandwidth. For that same $29, you now get a gigabyte. That's 5 times more bandwidth for your buck.
That's good. That's very good.
Very good. Good on you. And hopefully we'll see some more of that, because I think we're going to touch on this later, but I think you mentioned also in the news, Dr. Ron, that... who is it? One of the other ones, Virgin, actually getting involved in 3G.
In 3G, that's right, third generation, that's exactly right.
You'll update the website reflecting those changes?
I will. It's good. I'm glad that they're all doing it at once. I only have to update once now. We do have a little thing on our website which compares broadband prices, and it's in need of an update. So we'll get on to that and do that fairly shortly. But good on you. I think that's really where broadband's going to come. Fortunately, I guess it's a bit what they call cherry picking, where there's a good market, and 3 are obviously going out for the trying to get the corporate dollar and the boffin dollar, I guess, for those people who need to check their broadband out in the field. We use it here in the studio. It works very well.
You're getting down to that spot where, you know, the data's becoming so cheap you can run Skype or some other voice over IP over it, and instead of making the call yourself, you now actually just use the data as a service and put your own voice over IP like Skype on it.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Video games, they're coming of age too, Dr. Ron. The Wii could break the PlayStation 2's record How about this? Sales of Nintendo's quirky Wii video game machine could top the legendary PlayStation 2. Now, you're a PS2 person, aren't you, Dr. Ron?
I am. I'm addicted to Splinter Cell at the moment.
Is that a first-person shooter
game? Yeah,
Splinter
Cell.
Yeah, that'd be right.
Double Agent. I absolutely love it. I do share.
There was a program on the ABC about people like you.
Oh, really?
Just the other day about first-person shooters.
What's going to happen to
strange
me?
Strange names like Dr. Ron.
Oh, no.
No, you're thinking of the one on the Saturday night. No,
yeah.
Sorry, do tell.
Oh,
yes.
No, if I do shift work and I get home at midnight or 2 a.m. and I need to wind down or I can't go to bed straight away, so the last few weeks I've been sitting in front of Splinter Cell for hours on end and, yep, having a lot of fun. It's great, really good.
That's a valid point, actually. Go and buy yourself the previous generation of video game console, which are damn good in their own right.
It cost us...
And it'll cost you two-fifths of nothing.
$166, I think, for a PS2. That's great. We've got to stop my wife from buying all the games now.
Yeah, like our kids, I dread the day we bring home a video game. That's the end of life as we know it. They're already addicted to things on the computers from ABC Kids and things like that. Nintendo sped past Sony in marketing capitalization last month to become one of the 10 most valuable companies in Japan. So there you go. The Wii is looking like it's going to be good things for Sony. Now also, sorry, for Nintendo. Now also, speaking of Sony, they're going to launch a slimmer PlayStation device. Sony will launch a slimmer model of its PlayStation portable handheld game in September in its attempt to ignite demand for its game hardware and compete better with Nintendo. So Sony are feeling the pinch here. Must be a very aggressive marketplace out there for gamers.
It is. Sony's done very well to date, especially with the PS3, but a lot of people are watching what they are going to be doing in terms of their price points, because it's rather dear, the PS3.
They're up around $1,000, aren't they? $900 or something?
I'm looking
just guessing.
US $600, round about there. So what's that at the moment?
I don't know.
Pretty good Aussie dollar at the moment.
Aussie dollar at the moment is 87 point something or other, and they're tipping 90 cents by the end of the week.
That's fantastic, isn't that great?
Well, it depends which side of the fence you're on is whether that's fantastic.
No, I might go back into sales.
Might you?
Yeah. That's great.
If you're an American, Lydia, living in Australia, wanting to come back, it might be challenging.
You might be an importer. Import some US dollars at the end of this week.
This is what we used to do. Where I used to work, everything was purchased by
us.
It's
going to make technology very cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, we always used to buy stuff in US dollars, so we watched the exchange rate on a daily basis, and the higher the Aussie dollar, the better it was for our profit margins.
I wonder if that's going to be reflected in consumer items here, like plasma TVs, LCDs and the
like. You'd hope so. I wouldn't be holding my breath, though, sadly.
Well, it's a bit like, no, we won't get there. I was going to say oil and no, but anyway.
That's it. But with the PS3, they're marketing it as being a Blu-ray disc player, high-definition disc player as well, which it is.
You just need the telly to plug it into now.
This is the issue.
That's the catch.
That's the catch, and it's got a price tag to boot, so...
How much?
Well, as we said, like the $599 US,
yeah,
around about that area, and people can buy the Nintendos for a lot less.
So. When you think about it, a Blu-ray player is still very expensive in this country. They're, you know, $700, $800, if you can find one.
Well, that's just it. So why wouldn't you go and buy a PlayStation and have a games console as well?
Exactly. Mm. Now, getting back to the PSP...
Yeah, let's...
Did the original PSP have a touchscreen? I don't think it did.
No, you're asking the wrong person here.
Don't think so.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au if anyone knows.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to know if the new one, even though it's smaller and lighter, or at least thinner and lighter, whether it's actually got a touchscreen to keep up with the Nintendo DS, which has got, you know, two screens, one of which is a touchscreen.
That's right. And the DS stands for dual screen, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's the equivalent.
DS and DS Lite. I don't know what the difference between the two is. There's subtle differences between the two.
Mm-hmm. Probably subtle is the word. Now, in other news this week, which got my hackles up a little bit, Google is in trouble by the ACCC. Now,
I'll pop this in the news, I think.
This is a pretty sort of, I don't know, this leaves me speechless. I think everyone else can be the judge on this, but in essence what's going on, this guy called Michael Garnham, I think his name was, picked a fight with Google because he put a pay-per-click device up onto Google, which is the paid advertising. For people who aren't familiar with how Google works, which all two of you, on the left-hand side and the bottom is...
Both of us here?
No, okay. I'm sure you guys are.
Okay.
But on the bottom left-hand side, that white area, that's what they call organic search. Now, that you can't buy a result in there. That's just untouchable. And as a result, Google ranks your web page based on content, frequency, and references, and it puts it up there when you search for something like Tech Talk Radio. On the right-hand side, you see all those little ads which go for about a line and a little heading. You pay for those. They're an auction-style clicking. So you pay for, you know, 2 cents a click. Someone might pay 3 cents a click. So they'll be on top of you on the right hand side.
And it says that they're sponsored links on the page, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. It does say they're sponsored link, and on the top of the page too, it also says that they're a sponsored link.
And but they colour those too, don't they? They have
them coloured differently,
sort of thing, so you know once a paid result.
Spot on, as opposed to organic results.
Mm. Now, organic is good, because if you're found there, you're found on merit, not paid type.
Correct, not responses, how much money you have.
Here's Michael. This is what Michael said, and this is where he got his nose out of joint in relation to the search engine giant Google.
Well, they would type in the word sticky beak, and you know, up would come the search results, but on the right-hand side of the page, you know, our trademark would appear, but when people clicked on that trademark with the double EK, it would send people directly through to the Trading Post's website. Now, people had to actually click on that. They went through that word, that word sticky beak, to the Trading Post website. Now, you know, the amount of business that we would have lost as a result of that, goodness me, like how do you put a figure on that?
Well, you don't really put a figure on that, but I think in a lot of respects, this is where, I don't know. I don't know how he did that. It sort of leaves me a bit speechless, really.
Was the issue to do with the image and the text not being aligned properly or something? And that people are clicking.
The point I guess I'm trying to make is that we've distinguished how Google works. Mm. How can you make a boo-boo in this area? Like, the pay-per-click advertising is done by you, the Google's customer, so I don't understand this. And they're making a bit of a storm in a teacup, which the ACCC are sort of, we need to sort of find out a little bit more about it. So, I don't know, have you ever been misled by pay-per-click advertising, Dr. Ryan, apart from the spammy things that sort of pop in from time to time?
Apart from the spammy things, I don't believe so. I don't use really the pay-per-click services.
No,
I've never been.
Have you ever clicked on any of them to see where they go?
Yeah, I have. And we've spoken.
And you weren't misled or anything like that?
I don't believe so. No, I don't think so. And we've spoken in the past as well about the pay to surf type services and websites that are out there. Sites like Email Cash and Pure Profile and those sorts of sites where you actually have an account and you can click on links to increase the number of credits that you have in an account or the amount of money in your account. And I use those. I did a bit of a science experiment, as we discussed a while back, to see if you do actually get paid out, and all the ones I tried you do. But I've never been misled, I don't think, anyway.
John Butterworth is the CEO of the Australian Interactive Media Industry Association. Here's his response.
It's going to be very difficult for a search engine dealing with that, with this many keywords and this many ads to sit down and vet every single one, or even know the business models of the particular advertiser to know whether it's appropriate to sort of use a particular set of wordings or to use certain names. In Google's particular case, I know that they've got a system whereby if somebody else uses your trademark, you complain about it and the ads get taken down. So there are already mechanisms in place. You've got three sets of results, one that says sponsored links, another one that says sponsored links, and then you've got the main search results, which are done by the algorithm. Now, it's very much in the search engine's interest to make sure that algorithm is returning very, very relevant results, otherwise people won't use them. So there is absolutely no profit in them having sort of paid adverts appear to be part of the main results, because people will soon realise that it's not what they're looking for. So I'm still a bit baffled as to what they're trying to solve here. I mean, again, you know, do they want the word sponsored links in a, you know, a bigger font or something? Or it's just hard to know.
It is hard to know, and I think that's the crux of it. I think what this guy must have done is done something on his website, and in the organics it's come up and somebody else has done the same thing, because there's no word that you can, you know, you can't trademark a word. Well, very difficult is to trademark a word, especially something that's in. You should remember Google had all this problem about this word Google. Like, I'm going to Google you, Dr. Ron. Google has turned into a verb.
That's right. Yeah.
You can't do, because it's become grammar. Oh, it's a bit of a minefield, all this sort of stuff, isn't it?
Now the Australian competition watchdog has become involved in the whole affair, so we'll have to wait and see what happens over time. What have they asked Google to do? Make it more,
I don't
make
know.
It more obvious that the,
I think so, yeah.
The links
are
clicking.
Oh, can I read it here? It said it wanted to Google to stop publishing search results that fail to distinguish between paid advertisements and organic search results.
Well, there's no area of greyness there whatsoever.
In my mind, they don't fail to distinguish between
the
two.
No, that's what the ACCC are taking them to.
Well, I think someone in the ACCC is a bit misguided in that respect, because I couldn't give an example of Google
doing that.
Mm.
Not in a million years.
Well, it's back in 2005 when they did it, when the listed two car dealerships from New South Wales went off to the Trading Post instead. So whether it still happens or not, I don't know.
All right, let's have a bit of a quick chat about identity theft, one of these other great issues that are coming into vogue again. I just so happened to, I was doing my tax this year, as you do, which is what started me, and I'd like to present Exhibit A, which is a piece of paper here in the studio, which has got the Australian Tax Office heading on the top of it that says, identity theft and your tax file number.
Oh.
Now, who would want to nick a tax file number? I don't know. It's not my sort of...
Anybody that wanted to steal your identity, if they had your tax file number, that would be a huge, huge piece of information for them.
If you had a tax file number, that would open up doors in other areas, would it?
Definitely. If I had your name and your tax file number and your date of birth, I could go and do it. I could register businesses and get ABNs for business names and do all sorts of things, I suspect.
Because they pay a lot of tax on something.
They pay your tax on your behalf.
Earn a lot of income but not pay the tax.
That'd be good. That'd be handy.
What else did they have to say?
But basically, they went along about how does identity theft happen. Stealing purses, wallets, mail, mobile phones containing identity details or during a burglary. Pretending that their government, bank or other financial institutions representing representatives seeking information, the traditional phishing that we know of. Offering to complete a person's tax return or other documents that need their personal details, or using computer viruses or emails for phishing, which is another one of the ones that we know about. But I guess the identity theft issue stems beyond the online world, where if you drop a document, you know, it just accidentally falls out of your pocket, out of your wallet, out of your purse, wherever you might happen to be, and people go, oh, fantastic. One of the things that really bothers me is if you've been to a pub and you set up a tab and they go, hey, can I have your card?
Yeah.
What do you do then?
I say no.
Because that really bothers me.
I say no, and they say, well, we need your card. And I say, no, you don't.
Can you offer them something else, do you reckon?
Well,
you have my driver's license, or here, have $50 cash and pop that there, or something like that.
At the very least, you need to say to them...
Because they can nick the numbers. Because you need those 16 digits and the expiry date. Really, that's all you need in a lot of areas, to use someone's credit card and nick their banking details.
You shouldn't feel uncomfortable asking them what precautions or what security measures do you have in place. If I leave my card with you, where's it going to be? Is it going to stay on top of the bar all night? Are you going to put it away in the cash drawer or lock it somewhere secure? Because it's not just the venue that you're going to that you need to be concerned about. It's every other Tom, Dick and Harry that can be looking over the bar or that can have that card in sight that could punch the number into a mobile phone quickly and just make a note of it or jot it down somewhere.
Remember the old days when you used to have the credit card on you remember those slips, the clack machines that they used to put through, them a card?
And they still do when the phone lines are down and things like that.
It is. It's amazing how we got rid of, or the carbon paper went to a couple of sheets inside there so that once it gets ripped up and destroyed, you can't go and read the imprint on the
you can't
carbon.
Read your implant either.
No, exactly. No, you need to have a scan. You have to cross safeways with the cat.
That's it.
Yes. But I find that, you know, that it's still on the rise. And in the United States at the moment, they reckon over 7% of Americans have had their identity stolen. That's pretty large and startling number. And as I said in the opener, why can't that happen here?
That's probably bigger than the total population here.
I got a letter from my accountant a couple of weeks ago, because it is tax time, you're right, and I was mortified when I opened up the envelope.
Saying you had to pay your tax for 3 years?
No, thankfully it was addressed to me and it came to me and I received it, which was the one saving grace.
From your accountant or Pete Costello?
No, from my accountant, and inside it said, Dear Dr. Ron, it's tax time. We were looking forward to doing your tax return again this year. We just wanted to make sure that we had your personal details correct. And it had my name, my date of birth, my address, my telephone numbers.
In a letter addressed to you?
Yes, it was put in the mail, and I thought...
I'd be changing accountant if I were you.
And I mean, they're well-intentioned, but I thought if anybody had just taken this out of the letterbox, or if this envelope had been misplaced, all this personal information of mine is just out there in the open. That really is a problem.
So you have to be very careful. So let's move back into the online world. Do you use any software to ward you of... suspicious sites if you're going looking for online shopping, for example, or do you just trust? Is it in your bones?
I like to think that it's in my bones.
I do.
I use the force to a large extent, but I just steer clear of sites that I know I don't do business with already or who I've got any question about their reputation.
It's like going to a bank. You don't follow a link, you type it into your browser.
That's exactly, yeah.
You know, and it's just good common sense behaviour like that that's going to save you. And
on that one, I use favourites because I've done it before, and you know, it saves me having to put in again because I always use the favourite. I know it's safe, but can favourites be updated by viruses?
Yeah, they can, Mark.
It's a web browser. If you go and someone puts a bit of malicious code, which is quite easy to update, or put something in your favourites,
they can go look down. And if I had Commonwealth Bank, they could see, leave the Commonwealth Bank label as I always use, but change the link behind it.
Change the properties of that bookmark. That's right. I do use the favourites as well, but when I go to a banking site, I will always look at the little padlock and the security information at the bottom of the browser and verify that where I've gone to in my bookmark is actually where I was expecting to land.
That's common sense for people who are on the web each and every day.
To me, it's common sense. A lot of people don't think the same way I do, and that might be a good thing or it might be a bad thing.
I think if you can smell around, it's like if you go into a retailer, you know, and you know he's wearing the sunnies and he's got the dark hat on, and I've got this under the table type sort of arrangement.
Just give me your Visa card number, and it'll be good.
literally, you smell a rat and you go, "Hang on, there's something not quite right here." And then at the other end of the scale, you've got, you know, you go into the big department stores and you know it's all ridgy-didge and the like. So you get a feel for your transaction, and you need to get that online these days when you go to some websites. If they're feeling a bit dodgy, don't. If it's too good to be true, as they say, it is too good to be true.
That's the thing that scared me when we went to, was it IE7? I think they moved the padlock, and it looks different. It goes up the top now, I think, instead of down the bottom, and it's a different-looking padlock.
So you're the one who's using IE7, aren't you?
Yeah, that's the one. I'm the one.
I haven't noticed an IE7 on the Firefox.
Scared the hell out of me. Hang on, I'm on the banking website here. Where's the padlock?
Where's the padlock? Quick! They just moved it around on the screen.
I think so. I think it's up on the top right now instead of down the bottom.
And the background changes in the title bar as well, changes colour. I'm not an i7 user, I think it does, so it goes goes green if it's secure or something like that.
That's right, there is a red section too for other not so secure.
Depending on what web browser you are using, just get familiar with the security controls and how it's supposed to behave.
Can I recommend a good antivirus program? Well, not so much antivirus, because this ain't viruses we're talking about. I use Kaspersky's on the laptop and most of the machines, and they watch your web habits and your web surfing, and as soon as you get to a dodgy site or something gets maliciously tried to put on your machine, you'll get that warning. And I've never found those warnings to be anywhere half as good as what Kaspersky gives on some of the other software packages that are available. My tip.
Can I give you a good Commonwealth Bank story, just quickly?
We are running out of time, but yes, quick.
It's unusual for me talking. Well,
you don't even bank with them. This must
be raising up the Commonwealth Bank. Yeah, my mother was doing some online transactions on eBay last week, and she got a phone call from them saying...
Oh, I get them all the time, and I'm at the studio.
Yeah, that's good. And they just said, look, we noticed that an unusual number of transactions has been occurring on your account this week. Is that you? Is that normal? And she said, well, yeah, it is normal, and it is me. Thank you very much for letting me know.
They have some pretty sophisticated software.
I was impressed with that.
Which watches your habits. And live in a certain area, they expect transactions from a certain area to come through.
Yep.
It's when you do funny little transactions, and I've noticed that if I renew something in the United States, which is only less than, say, $10, $10, they're on the phone as quick as look at me.
Because the merchant is overseas, and they're saying, well, Andrew's not overseas, we'll better just double-check this.
Yeah, that too. He can't be overseas and here at the same time. Yeah.
And also, $10 on a credit card statement, people just say, oh, yeah, who cares? But if everyone debited $10 to a credit card statement where everyone goes, yeah, who cares, someone's going to be very rich on the other side of the world. And
I lost a credit card once. It was a work credit card and left in a taxi, and I'm not sure who got it, but the first thing they tried was just a telephone call using a credit card to pay for it over in Singapore. And once that got through, then they were off and they were spending. But that was the first transaction. Just a low-cost thing just to see if it worked.
Test the card,
And probably from a public telephone booth that doesn't cost, you know, like they won't get caught out from any address on the internet or anything. So
Be careful.
Yeah. Adam Turner has just sent us an email saying StickyBeak's competitors, the Trading Post, bought the keyword StickyBeak and stole his traffic. And there's an article there. So the plot will thicken here. I think it's a bit more than a Google issue. It might be a bit more. So now, speaking of Adam Turner, he jumped on the couch this week.
Did he have a view from the couch?
He did, and it was all about Apple. Apple again. I'm sorry, people who think we carry on about Apple, I'm sorry, but this is...
We do.
We do.
It's unintentional. It just works out that way.
Apple are bullying some of their customers. Well, I don't know. Bullying's the wrong word when it comes to customers with Apple. But nonetheless, media and the likes getting the raw prawn from Apple as well. So here's a view from the couch. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Apple's arrogance and paranoia has reached new heights. with the lawyers from Cupertino forcing Australian technology magazine APC to pull a positive OS X Leopard article discussing features Steve Jobs has already presented on stage at Macworld. The online article by APC's Danny Gorog examined user interface refinements such as spaces, stacks, and Leopard's new look, features Jobs demonstrated at length in his recent Macworld keynote. APC removed screenshots from the article after initial legal threats from Apple's lawyers, who claimed, quote, the software has been distributed to developers under strict terms of confidentiality that prohibits any dissemination of screenshots or confidential details of its operation. Unsatisfied, Apple's lawyers demanded the removal of the entire article, citing, quote, trade secret misappropriation, a legal concept that exists in the United States but not in Australia. APC complied with Apple's demands rather than risk an expensive lawsuit originating in the United States. The move has generated debate amongst Australia's journalism fraternity, with some questioning why APC, which is backed by the deep pockets of the Packer Empire, backed down so quickly. Apple has had a love-hate relationship with the media for a long time. There is a circle of Apple-worshipping scribes falling over themselves to praise Apple and Steve Jobs at every turn. But for the rest of us not in the Apple fan club, the computing giant can be very difficult to deal with. Apple refuses to comment on discontinued products, it refuses to comment on unreleased products, it refuses to comment on anything unless it suits Apple's purposes. I once got a big laugh at the Apple Christmas party, sitting at the table of Apple Australia Managing Director Tony King, when I said over lunch that I'd ask him what's for dessert, but I know Apple doesn't like to comment on courses that haven't been served yet. It was funny, because it's true. Apple has a long history of bullying the media and dragging journalists through the courts to stop information leaking. But demanding the takedown of a positive article discussing topics that are already public knowledge is a new low. Even so, Apple can do no wrong in the eyes of many. Microsoft puts a foot out of place and is crucified in the media, but Apple gets away with arrogance and bullying scot-free. Apple treats the media with contempt, yet when it launches Leopard, it will expect journalists to lap it up and shower the company with praise. What would happen if someone launched an OS and nobody came?
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
Talk Radio.
We're getting to the bottom of this Google thing at the moment. Apparently, what was the story, Dr. Ron? The domain was registered. Oh, sorry, not the domain. Do tell what you're saying during the break.
Trademark?
Trademark. That's the word. Sorry, I just had a mental one.
The registered trademark of a company was used by another company in order to attract traffic to its site.
And Google, well, obviously they can't do much about it.
Possibly.
Well, yeah. But they're talking about organics here. They've got to be talking about organics, not paid links, because
Definitely separated and expected.
Yeah, if you put the word Telstra or optimise your site for the word Telstra, for example, it'll come up fairly close to the top of the list under Telstra, maybe even over Telstra if you do a better job.
We'll do some more research and let you know next week.
Yeah, it's the only way it could be. But anyway, let's have a chat about IPTV. In the reports this week in the mainstream media, Australia's special broadcasting service, SBS, has been awarded... it has awarded Tamberg Television an equipment and manufacturing services contract that will enable it to deliver IPTV services. It is Ericsson Australia's first dealing with Tamberg TV. That came from ITY, which is going to be interesting. So shortly, for those who are broadband enabled, you'll be able to hit the SBS website and watch them, I assume, streamed online. Because SBS doesn't go everywhere, apparently.
They run a couple of channels, don't they? They've got the usual SBS channel, which we all know and love here, and then they've also got...
They've got a digital channel, which has got, I think it's news.
They've got a news one. They've got one just with news headlines, haven't they?
The other channel I've seen is just foreign language news.
Yes, yeah, on channel something on digital. I can't remember what number it is.
Yeah,
but
the other one.
Because not being classified
we all watch it, can't you?
Not being classified as a commercial network, yeah, they're allowed to run different content on their different channels on digital, aren't they?
Mm, yes. So that's interesting news, and so something's obviously starting to head down the digital TV streaming side of things.
Just with that view from the couch we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
I think I saw something on the website after that, a few comments saying that that company had signed a non-disclosure agreement, and that's why Apple were coming heavy on them, because they had breached it, even though what seemed to be already released and that sort of thing had been released to people who had signed a non-disclosure agreement saying that they couldn't actually release any information.
So but they did
that's
anyway.
Why they, yeah, and that's why Apple had gone heavy. So there's sort of...
This is APC, Australian Personal Computer, I think. Is
yeah,
there.
That's right. So, yeah, I'm not sure if... I didn't quite hear the end of...
Well, if that
Adam's
be the case,
report,
then they've got everything.
That's what it had on the website. So, yeah. So that's probably why they've gone heavy so much.
Oh, well. It's the joys of the cutthroat world of the media, really. Everyone's after the leading story. iPods and Lightning are a shocking, powerful combination. Did you hear about this, boys? If you're outside and you're in a thunderstorm...
Don't use your iPod.
Get the iPod off, quick smart.
Really?
Turn your iPod off and remove the headphones from your ears or risk being zapped in the head.
Very good.
And that's not my CD disc either, by the way. It's Dr. Ron's personal sound effects happening over there.
Can't we just play, what is it, Website of the Week and whatever it is?
So
at the start of it?
Did someone learn the hard way? This is what I want to know.
Reports, this induced current, is it? It's not direct strike, obviously.
Yeah. Reports that iPod users are being badly zapped in the head by freak encounters with lightning cause jaw breakages, popped eardrums, burn marks on the body where the headphones lay from the ears to the iPod,
and more
are making iPod users think twice about listening to music outdoors when there's a thunderstorm, especially when you're playing golf.
Why are people standing outside?
Under a tree.
Why are people standing in thunderstorms with iPods on?
Just walk down the street, any street in any city, and you count the white curly cords coming off people's ears going down into their pockets.
They're waiting for their bus.
Exactly.
But you think they'd have more chance of... Like they've got an umbrella up above them or something, and lightning striking that.
And
or you're flying a kite with a key on it, and your iPod's on, and you know it's
with the metal hat on your head.
Yeah, right. Just keep the
look. It could be
the
a
CIA out of your brain.
It could be a storm in a teacup. It could be a storm at your bus stop. Who knows?
Storm in your iPod.
But it's and it's not necessarily iPod. It's anything with earphones with a bit of wire going up. Could be your mobile phone, couldn't it?
On a serious note, you shouldn't use telephones during a thunderstorm.
That's the wide variety.
The wide variety. You can get acoustic shock, can't you?
And electric shock.
Yes, and electric. It can hit the wires out in the street or the pole because they run along the poles. And if you're on the other end of it, even though they do have safety measures, it's not guaranteed, and suggests that you don't use your phone during a lightning storm.
All care, no responsibility on the part of the telcos.
Mm-hmm.
They must get a lot of damage to exchanges with a good electrical storm going across, I would have thought.
Yeah, you'd guess so, but I mean, you've got other wires above it, usually, when they're running across the power poles. They've got other wires above it that can hit first.
You're in the mobile phone business, apart from the fact you probably haven't had any tanks knock your mobile base stations over this week.
Classic.
Yeah, what?
don't you spoil my odd spot.
No. Sorry. Have you ever had strikes to lightning mobile base station?
Oh, yeah. Yes,
what happens to them?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Is it?
Man, no, not the damage they cause, but you should see some of the antennas. You're like, you know, I've seen... at the old Telstra research labs, they used to have this lightning thing where they test all their stuff. And some of the demonstrations they do in there is they turn Coke cans into wine goblets, like just from the lightning current induced and that sort of thing. Well, I've seen the same thing happen to a mobile phone antenna.
Turned into a goblet?
Sorry, a base station antenna. Yeah, basically the current, all the antennas are actually grounded, so... Believe it or not, if you put a multimeter on, they're actually connected to Earth. That's the way they're designed, so that if lightning does hit them, it goes straight to Earth rather than into the equipment. Now,
does that work in theory?
Yeah,
I mean, in practice?
It works pretty well. And there's another zap strap close with just as you get inside the hut down below. Also, it takes it to Earth, so it sometimes can knock it out if it's bad enough. But, you know, they've got a lot of stuff in there to stop that sort of thing. But you should see what it does, like copper tube like you'd have for your hot water service, just gets shrunk down to about a tenth the size, just implodes on itself. If that makes
really?
Sense. Yeah, it looks... Oh, it's great.
You got any photos? We should put them up on the website. This is what happens to a lightning strike at a mobile phone.
I've still got one where I'm working at the moment. I'll grab a hold of a photo of it and or bring it in or something, and yeah, if I can, if I remember.
I know when I used to do telephone cabling, when you terminated the telephone wires on a distribution frame, there were modules you could plug in which were gas-filled lightning arrestor
That's
modules.
Right. Yep.
So that... it was designed so that if there was actually a sudden increase in the voltage on the line from a lightning strike or something like that, these little gas arresters would burst, and in
they
theory they would
cross, don't
yeah,
they? Yeah, certain voltage.
Exactly, and that would protect the customer
the
equipment.
Yep, and the wire, everything else beyond that spot.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to be around to find out though.
No, I wouldn't. No, I'd like to be far away.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Mark Diggins, and Andrew McColm in with you this evening. With the federal election approaching, the pollies are doing everything in their power to actually get their message across, and leaving no stone or influential networking site unturned. In this instance, they're taking to MySpace and all that. So you're seeing a lot of pollies now going out there with the little handy cam doing a trek. We saw this recently with a state election here in Melbourne not so long back. One of the members for Paran, whose name eludes me at the moment, but we did have a chat to him, he actually went out there and gave us a tour of his electorate and showed us all the things that he was going to do and do that sort of stuff.
Ding-ding, he had all trams going past.
That's
the
right,
on Chapel
he did
Street.
Too. He did too. Now, the federal police are actually taking to this as well, because this is where MySpace and FaceOff and all those things are going these days, where anyone can communicate to anyone via video. You don't have to put on a TV station anymore. You can, you know, because Google will find all these things now for you and, you know, cough up the video just as easily as you would if you paid for it and put it on free-to-air television. So the internet is really changing the way pollies are marketing themselves. Have you seen any evidence of this yet for this election, Dr. Ron?
I haven't gone looking.
It's only a matter of time, though, isn't it? But yes, and I think the mainstream media will cotton on with all this sort of stuff too.
So can you add yourself as a friend, a John Howard friend?
Well, it's very funny, actually.
We should add ourselves as Helen Coonan friends.
You can. No, it's people saying no. But yes.
Lots of people shaking their head in the studio.
That would be the only
downside.
We want
to be impartial. We want to sit on the fence like Helen does.
Oh, okay.
She's gone very quiet lately. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
I haven't seen her pop up anywhere.
Yeah.
There must be an imminent
election coming.
There must be an imminent announcement coming for who's going to get fibre to the node.
Yeah. Very busy working.
So they're in
that
the they're in the bunkers. They're digging in the trenches.
All that good stuff.
But yes, it would be very funny because you have friends on MySpace, don't you? Wonder
yeah,
if Kevin Rudd's
right.
got
was,
any friends.
Wasn't it a week ago or something they were having? I'm sure I saw something about a week ago in the news saying that Kevin Rudd had 2,000 friends. And John Howard had 78 or something, you know.
Is this a new form of polling?
Yeah, that's what, and
maybe.
MySpace were launching something new, which I didn't quite get onto, but their site actually, was it MySpace Instant or something, some new name anyway, and it was really for politicians and other influential people. And it wasn't really about, you know, they could put all their information on it and that sort of thing, but it wasn't your standard site, you know, your standard MySpace, what would you call it?
Is this an abuse of technology? I don't know what you call it, Mark.
I think,
your question.
Well, it was different the way the Liberal Party and the Labor Party were embracing it, you know, and it was like all positive comments from the Labor Party. Now, I mean, obviously, there's vested interest in it, don't get me wrong, but the Liberal Party were all a bit funny about it, the ones they'd polled and had in this article sort of thing. And I think, I don't know, it just appeared to me that Kevin Rudd, in this case, was embracing the technology, seeing that it was for the younger generation, thought it was a great idea, and the Liberals were, you know, a bit standoffish with it sort of thing. So.
Well, it's a bit like the internet, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And their party policies. I think you could read between the line there a little bit about who's. Yes, we won't go there. Not just yet. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to be back. Apparently, Microsoft have got some new server software coming out fairly shortly, which we'll talk about after this.
Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's Charlie. It's child's play. Oh, it's child's play.
Podcasting is so easy because I'm my little sister Emily can do it.
Step one, download and install some podcatching software like iPodder, Thunderbird or iTunes. Step two, find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step three, copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software. And you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn on a train.
But car is Charlie Pussy.
The Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCallum. Dr. Ron is here this evening, and so is Mark Diggins. And we've been talking all things about lightning striking things, mobile phone base stations, just a combination of lightning electricity that you don't really want to mix with in a lot of respects, or on a golf course under a big tree.
With an umbrella.
Yeah.
While you're flying a kite with a key attached.
That's all right being in an aeroplane.
No, don't fly a kite in an aeroplane.
No, no, no.
That's
but
where
flying...
you mow the lawn, isn't it?
Oh.
mowing the lawn on... No, no, no.
That was on a train.
Now you're making the edit difficult, boys. Yeah. Thank you for that. Graham will curse you now.
It's all right. Graham will cope. He does a sterling job.
He does indeed. Yes. We're going to talk about Microsoft. They've decided that they've thrown Vista upon us, and now it's time for those server gurus out there, because we've all been using Server 2003, Release 2.
Vista Server that's coming out.
Longhorn. Remember that name?
That's the code name, isn't it?
Yeah. Microsoft official said that the software vendor plans to release updated versions of Windows Server, SQL Server, and Visual Studio at the same time early next year, which is going to be around about February 2008, I believe. We're going to get new versions of all types of servers, which means that they're going to move all the bugs out of the old one into the new one and change them for us.
Now, SQL Server,
yes.
SQL stands for Structured Query Language, and that's a database server.
It is,
so
and it goes
by
a lot of web companies use it for when people write web things and bits and pieces and stuff. You've had fun with SQL servers of recent time when you got your blog going, didn't you, Dr. Ron?
That's right. I had to get an SQL server running on my Linux server.
Your average person doesn't need
probably
to know this.
Probably not going to need to go there, no, but just be aware that database server is something that businesses need to use, and this is something that Microsoft is updating, which is good.
So this is going to be revolutionary when it comes out and all that. So I wonder if it's going to be like Vista. Because Vista was good. I'm still getting used to
How's
Vista.
How's it going on the laptop?
Oh, look, it's going very well. One thing I have been suitably impressed with is Vista is finding drivers, which you don't need to put disks in for and Whoa. Anything like that, which I thought was really good.
Probably the first time, isn't it?
A cordless mouse was purchased in recent times, one of the relatively new cordless mouses of a well-known brand, but not the proprietor's brand. And said little thing was stuck in the back of the USB port, and she came up without even a flinch.
So you didn't need to put a special disc in to get it working?
I had the disc out, all ready to go.
And Vista just handled
it?
It
was not required. Vista said, I know what this is, and here it is. And sure enough, it just worked.
That's good, isn't it?
It's good. One thing, though, that I have been exceptionally frustrated by with Vista is it locks everything down. There are so many questions you need to answer. And you can actually get in there if you know what you're doing, but most people, once again, they don't want to go there because you have to go into strange places where you've never been before and change parameters that you would never change again so that you don't get all these things thrown up at you when it queries you about, would you like to really install this program, or would you like to delete this thing, or would you like to add this user?
Hello, I'm the paperclip. It looks like you're trying to write a letter.
The paperclip has gone.
They did away with that, didn't
Office
they?
Office 2007, there's no paperclip or dog or anything like that.
The
Mark,
death of the paperclip.
Have you loaded it, Mark? You have, haven't you?
Office, yeah. Office 2007, yeah. They
Are you missing the paperclip?
Oh, of course not. I had so much trouble getting rid of it on the old versions, too.
That dog kept coming back, did it?
Oh, I had the
I know people who love it.
You changed it into Little Einstein just to make it feel happier, but he still couldn't get rid of him. You know?
I never had that problem.
The little dog's still there when you search, isn't it, in XP? If you use the search function.
I've seen it there.
Little
I don't know whether
comes
it does
up
anything
and digs holes and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
So, yes. We're going to actually... You know how we had Microsoft in the other day, Sarah, talking about...
Sarah Bond.
That's right.
Yep.
She was talking about open source, the MS Microsoft...
Office Open XML.
That's the one. We're going to have people in fairly shortly going to have a chat to us... Donna Benjamin is going to come in. And now she was in, when Adam was at CBIT in Sydney, he had a chat to her there at one of the shows. Now she's basically,
where's Donna from?
She's, you can ask me that. Hang on, let me scroll down in the email.
But she's going to talk about the other side of the coin in terms of open XML.
If nothing else, balance on this program. We're going to get from the open source side of all that sort of thing. I'm sorry, I'm scrolling.
That's all right.
I wish you didn't ask me that question.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
So, yes, that'll be good. We'll have her in one day very shortly. Next week, don't forget, we're going to be talking about digital photography and all good things when it comes to that.
With Michelle Lawrence.
Exactly. Now, did we touch briefly on Virgin's 3G launch before? on our mobile phone device?
We mentioned it, and we had it in the news.
Virgin Mobile is expected to officially throw the switch on its 3G network by the end of the month following the successful installation of several key support...
Did you just say instication?
I think that's what I just said.
That's all right. Go on.
Sorry. I have a cold. yes. Why do you think it's taken them so long to launch a 3G network when everyone... Well, Optus are in the same boat, really, aren't they? They've only just... Have they got theirs up and running yet?
Optus, sure Optus have, yeah.
Because this was coming in May, I think they might have only just recently turned it on.
I'm sure Vodafone are running theirs too now, they've turned on.
So Virgin's the last guys. Well, Crazy John's going to get his own mobile network happening fairly shortly, from what I can understand too.
Looks like Virgin are building their own network. Mark, are they putting their own network together?
Are they? Oh, look, it's news to me. I just thought that would...
I love the way we look around.
Surely
the
not.
Are they?
Someone will know.
That's why we come to this room and we sit here in our lounge room each week and we talk about technology.
I can't believe you brought this up. I told you I didn't do the research on this. You gave me the rundown tonight. You know, it was too late.
Look, Virgin have had a huge success in the United Kingdom and they've rolled out a big suite of 3G-enabled products. So if they're UK... truck record is anything to go by. They should have an
excellent... So they're going to roll out their own hardware, is what you're saying, unlike what they're doing at the moment, which is reselling another telco.
That's right. That's my understanding, Mark, yeah.
So more huts on the hill.
Yeah.
More space in racks.
That's it. Virgin's supplier TriPoint Corporation has finished...
Have they got any bandwidth? Have they bought any spectrum?
Not that I'm aware of. Oh. But I know nothing about this. You guys are running around. I'm leaving you high
We're looking
dry.
Mark, you're supposed to know. Oh, you're hard.
The news story says they've finished implementation of a number of platforms, including storage arrays, and they've said Virgin Mobile will commission the new systems by the end of July. So it's imminent.
Another player in the field.
There is a possibility, too, and I'm not sure what they're doing, but you can actually use someone else's base stations, and when it gets back to the base station controller, or RNC, it's a radio network controller these days, you can shoot it off to your own media gateway, or MSC, mobile switching center, or whatever it might be. So you can actually have your calls come in, and you know those mobiles are then identified to go off to a different one, and you can charge them separately and give them different services.
So you could use the... You could use the radio infrastructure of an existing carrier and then do your own switching and your own call management.
Yeah, that's right. It's already happening between Optus and Vodafone in country areas, I think.
Where they share base stations.
Yeah, they share the base stations. Yeah.
Very good. Watch this space. We'll soon see when the Virgins... Does Branson own it still? Anyone know?
No? Yeah.
He does?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. When we're going to... We'll return shortly. We're going to talk about... recycling your computer. Do you recycle any bits of your computer? How do you do it? Just chuck it out in the nature strip?
No, my recycling is...
Don't eat this, man. Graham Callaghan's in the studio. I haven't said much tonight, but we've seen that monitor on your nature strip.
My version of recycling is I just hoard everything and nothing ever goes out, so... Don't need to recycle.
Oh, good. Your wife must love
she
you.
She does.
Yeah.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
A couple of interesting things during the break. Adams sent us another email. The Australian Personal Computer did not sign a non-disclosure agreement, so...
Thank you for that update.
Thanks, Adam. And he also mentioned, too, which is a good little tip, I didn't know this one, Vista. If you actually use the search box in Vista, you can actually type up a command in there, the run command into the search box. So I'll have to try that. Thanks, Adam. Some interesting other things, too, before we digress. When you research this program, you come across some very interesting things written by certain journalists around the countryside. Some you just brush off, and some you just stops you dead in your tracks and you laugh and laugh and laugh. I'd like to tell you one here right now. There was an article written by Joe Best from ZDNet Australia, which was published on the 12th of July. The article was entitled, "When is broadband not broadband?" And to which the answer is, "When it's next G."
Oh,
she opens up her article, and it says this, and this is what cracked me up. In telecoms, Telstra is no 800-pound gorilla. It's an 800-pound colic-ridden infant irritably throwing its toys out of the pram when it doesn't get its own way.
Oh, dear.
I thought, well, I better read the rest of the article if we're going to start one off like that. I thought that was very humorous.
It's an interesting image, isn't it?
It does. It is. Now let's talk about computer recycling. We were speaking of it in jest before the break, but the Federal Environment Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, has revived plans to slug consumers with charges to cover the cost of recycling computers. Government officials have actually come out and said that during the course of the week. The Department of Environment and Water has confirmed that an advanced disposal fee would be among a range of measures that the state and federal environmental authorities would consider. Now, is this a tax on throwing out your old computer parts because they have to get rid of them? Is recycling computers become that much of a problem?
It sounds like it is. How are they going to implement this, though?
I have no idea. I've no idea. What, you're going to be a tax man at the tip saying, yeah, you've got computer bits in there, that's over any of the green stuff, and by the way, an extra $2.50 tax.
What have you got in your trailer behind your car?
What about the hard rubbish collections when you put them out on the nature strip for those that have such lovely things?
I thought that's where the recycling was done. You know, like, I mean, literally someone comes and takes them before the man with the truck arrives.
So that looks like a
That's illegal, isn't it? Oh, heaven forbid.
Yeah, it belongs to the local council by then.
Anyone who
it?
Wants to have my 10 megabit network cards, they're welcome to them as far as I'm concerned. And I can't see any recycling person actually taking an interest in them.
No.
What do they do with them? Crush them all down to become sand or something like that?
Well, it would probably crush them down. They try and extract all the valuable metals and things that are contained in the cards and the components, I would imagine.
A bit like the Mobile Muster, they take those in for the gold content.
Are they successful?
And for the same reason, I reckon, because...
Mm. And you don't want to put anything into the earth that, you know, is going to be dangerous and toxic in the years to come. So,
that's
we want to take away the bad bits and recycle the good bits, and I guess the rest of it ends up as...
How does that work? No one's ever cared about that before. There's arsenic in treatment in pine and stuff like that, isn't there? How does that work?
Well, they're starting to care about now, aren't they?
It's funny, really, isn't it? No care and no responsibility until all of a sudden we have carbon emissions and things like that.
The other big issue is the chemicals that you have in the batteries. There's, if you think about computer motherboards, they've got batteries on them. And things like mobile phones, you mentioned,
they have
batteries attached. And
there's some nasty chemicals, mercury and things like that that appear in those.
That's right, all the nickel, cadmium and things like that. Yeah, they need to be disposed of properly and safely.
So just throwing them out, the tip doesn't cut it anymore these days. We're becoming that much more environmentally friendly.
Because
The batteries on mobile phones, if you're talking about that, that'd be a huge problem, wouldn't it? Because you'd have all those dead chemicals that, people throw them in the rubbish bin, they end up as landfill.
Going to landfill, that's right.
That can't be good. Mm. That can't be good. All right, so, it looks like there's another tax we've got to look forward to for people that are interested in technology. That's going to kill a lot of the larger users of technology, I would have thought, unless they can crush them up and dispose them themselves. But we'll have this thing now where people can dump and run, you know, like people used to put chemicals down the, into the rivers and things like that. We're going to have dumps of...
Just like in South Australia where you get your 5 cents back on your bottle. We need to do it the other way. We need to pay up front for it, and then if you return to the right spot, you get your... money back.
Have you considered a career in politics, Mark? I think that's a fantastic idea.
It's a great spin, isn't it?
What do you reckon about broadband? Have you got a policy on broadband?
He's very diplomatic, isn't he, Mark?
I don't want to hear his policies here.
No.
Mark for PM, vote Tech Talk Radio, number one.
Everyone pays 10% more for electricity, and then it's enforced that everyone,
That's right, and a 10% levy on computers and mobile phones, but then
when
you...
return to the right spot, you get your 10%
that's
back.
That's it, you get the money back when you take it to the recycling repo.
Yeah, give people incentive. There's this... stick and the carrot, isn't it?
That's it.
And this way is both, I
reckon. Don't eat the carrot, we'll beat you with the stick. Yes, vote one, PM, Mark, there we go.
That's good. There'll be a vacancy shortly, just watch, hang out. It'll be good. Hey, we were talking about Facebook, and we were talking about the pollies getting on there recently and sort of, you know, belting it up a bit.
Facebook.
Universities and Hotmail users are behind the sudden rise in the popularity of the US-based social networking website Facebook in Australia. In the past 4 months, Facebook has grown by 273%, a bit like the Aussie dollar, outpaced the growth of industry leader MySpace. Facebook boasts around about 141,000 Australian members, which is still light years behind the MySpace 3.8 million Australian profiles.
Yeah, I mean, when you get to 3.8 million, I'm not sure where saturation is, but it's hard to make a 273% increase on 3.8 million, isn't it? Mm.
How many people have got in this country? 20 mil? Mm. 3.8. So nearly, what's that? That's a lot of the population, really.
300% would be three times what it is at the moment.
Anyone here got a Facebook account?
I don't have a Facebook account. I like MySpace. The idea...
The dog's got one, hasn't it? Your puppy?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, someone that I know has. Maybe I have. I'm not sure. I often set little things up as tests and then never use them ever again.
Was that your dog that you're putting photos on? No, that was a blog, wasn't it?
Test the puppy's got a blog.
That's right, the blog. Mm.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so it hasn't made it to Facebook yet.
Not quite yet. The thing I like about Facebook is that you can use your existing Hotmail or Gmail accounts. you don't have to actually create a new account and remember another username and another password. It's hooked
into...
That's
the bane of current modern online life, really, isn't it? Another password to add to the collection?
Well, Facebook's hooked into Hotmail, Yahoo, Gmail, or MSN or AOL email. You can use all of those sorts of logins to just start using it straight away.
It's funny you mention AOL here. They've taken a leaf out of one of our major telcos books here in customer service. Averting a looming court battle over how it's handled the exodus from its internet dial-up service, AOL has agreed to make it easier for the remaining customers to leave as a part of a US $3 million settlement with 48 states and districts and the District of Columbia. Apparently, you couldn't unsubscribe to this service.
Well, they just kept sending your bill.
Exactly.
Eh? Oh.
Exactly. I don't want your dial-up anymore. Yes, sir. Thank you for taking off next month to get another bill.
Well, that's a good business model for them. The shareholders would be fairly happy, I'd expect.
AOL was always a law unto their own, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they haven't changed.
We usually just block AOL IPs.
Are they still big?
For everyone's convenience. They're huge, I think.
Are they only in America? Or?
Mm. We used to have to do certain things on your browser to use AOL or access mail or something. It was bizarre. I don't know. I was never a user. I never paid attention to it. But at the end of the day, they were a fairly interesting organisation technically to deal with, from my understanding.
If you're an AOL subscriber and you're listening in the US,
especially
then...
Especially
dial-up. Yeah, especially dial-up. Ping us an email and let us know about your experience at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Fantastic. That'd be good. We like getting emails. Lots of emails in tonight, too, I've noticed. So it's good. Someone asked where we could be heard in Perth before, too.
Yes. Streaming. I responded to that email. I put the details on the forum.
What did you say to them?
Gave them the website and the time and everything else.
Oh, good. Well done. Yes, now you can hear us all over the place.
Lots of internet radio stations now. There's internet radio stations in the US that run us, which is terrific. Oh, if you're listening on Stop and Go Radio,
I think in Chicago.
Yeah. There's other ones as well. So have a look on the forum and there's all the ways you can listen to us listed there.
When we return, Gadget of the Week, Website of the Week, and the good old Odd Spot.
Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own!
The Gadget of the Week is my father-in-law's new Digitech DGHT160 personal video recorder.
Oh, really? You haven't got over this yet?
No. I set it up. It works an absolute treat.
Good. Adam was setting his up at the same time on his
father's
machine or something.
And I got chicken rissoles for dinner and he missed out.
Did he?
Yeah,
okay.
He
the chicken rissoles are good.
Yeah. It took me about 15 minutes to unpack and set up. And
good, eh?
I was very chicken impressed. Rissoles. The contrib, like Adam, the contribution that our father-in-laws or respective fathers made to the whole installation process was putting batteries in the remote control. And that's where their contribution ended. But that's good. It's a great little device and it works extremely well.
Yeah.
It's got pros and cons. I think it's not for everyone, this sort of a device. I think it's ideal for Eddie. I think it'll work really well for him. It's only got one tuner. So
I can't record two things at once.
That's right. You can only record one thing at a time. That's what you're watching.
You researched them. Did you find many with two tuners in them?
Well, this has actually got... This has got an analog tuner as well as a digital tuner, but you can't use both at the same time. There are ones with dual digital tuners, but they're in the next price bracket.
Okay.
What you can do, though, is you can loop the RF or the antenna connector in and out into your telly, so you can watch something on your TV and you can record something on another channel if you want to.
Yeah, I hope so.
You can do it that way. You can time shift up to 1 hour if you press pause because the telephone rings.
1 hour?
Yeah.
So you get a 1 hour. That wouldn't do you with your mum.
Well, no, or my wife's mother, no. If don't lose the remote control is my advice. Yes, because everything's done from the remote control. And also, I recorded a program off air.
They got a dog?
Extremely well. No.
Oh, that's good. There's a remote control for half a chance.
It won't get buried. Yeah. Yes. It's got a nice big 160 hours of recording time.
Oof.
You can get them here from JB, Harvey Norman, all those sorts of stores. The Digitech DGHT160.
Yeah, very good. So well worth the investment, you
reckon? I think so, definitely. A good little unit.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Well, we had to have a bit of a laugh over this one in the studio. Even before the studio, it was going around on the weekends. Adam Turner obviously has too much spare time as he's a journalist, and he sent us a beautiful website of the week, because I did say, anyone got a good one? And he came back with willitblend.com.
Will it blend?
Will it blend?
Will what blend?
Exactly, is the question.
Okay.
The iPhone is the top of the list at the moment. Will the iPhone blend? So if you're interested in seeing whether an iPhone can cut it in a blender and what actually happens, this is the website for you. Completely non-technical.
So this crazy man drops an iPhone in a blender and presses blend.
That's
and
right.
A smoothie option.
But he just technology is not his only blending interest. He blends all sorts of things from what I can understand
he's
and read on his website.
Dozens and dozens of videos there, hasn't he, of things he's blended in his blender. And there's a do not try this at home category, and
there's a
it's safe to try this at home category.
Especially sniffing the, what is it, the
ice smoke.
Ice smoke.
Comes out of the iPhone, doesn't it?
That's a classic.
Dear. So that is the Tech Talk Radio website of the week. So if we'll put links on our website to it, but if you've got spare time in the office tomorrow and you want to do a bit of wilfing, that's the one for you. Willitblend.com. Thanks, Adam.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you, Mike, in Perth, for this valuable contribution. A man who destroyed 7 mobile telephone towers in a stolen tank claimed he had been affected by radio waves emitting from the cellular base stations.
Nothing else.
John Robert Patterson, 45, of Darrick in New South Wales, I believe, allegedly stole the tank and used it to attack 7 mobile phone towers over the weekend. Patterson will face Penrith local court charged with numerous offences, including predatory driving and malicious damage. It's believed that Patterson used to be a telecommunications worker. He thought he had been damaged by mobile phone radio waves. In refusing bail at Parramatta Court yesterday, Magistrate Terry Forbes recommended Patterson received psychiatric attention
for his damage.
Should he work for Telstra by any chance?
Apparently he used to do telecommunications work for the Army, and he believed the mobile phone waves had harmed his head, so he hadn't been wearing aluminium hats. A spokesman said Telstra had 4 towers brought down in the western suburbs. The owner of the tank, Greg Morris,
said his
armoured personnel carrier is trashed, but he's vowed to repair it. He said the APC had been very popular at weddings, student formals, monster truck shows and bar mitzvahs. There we go, there's the Odd Spot.
And Telstra had a cow set up within a few hours of that.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny actually, because the bit
fell on wheels.
The bit that Dr. Ron didn't read out was the bit that's on the screen here in front of me. It says, mobile phone service has been disrupted while technicians waited to gain entry to the crime scene. Hello, there's a gaping hole in the middle of your base station. How... Hang on, I'm going to get the keys, guys.
That's great. You can't write this stuff anyway.
No, exactly. What will we be reporting on next week? Someone's nicked something else and rammed it through something. Anyway, that's technology for you as we see it at Tech Talk Radio this week. Next week we have photography. Digital photography is top of the list. Michelle Lawrence will hopefully be here, and he's a photographer. He's got some big projects, and he'll tell us all about it then. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. We like hearing from you guys. Visit the website, send us your comments, good or bad. We're getting a great range of everything these days.
A mixture, mixed bag.
It's been fantastic. Keep them coming through from all over the world. We enjoy them, whether it be down the road or the other side of the world. It's fantastic. Thanks, everyone, for making the show what it is. We'll be back same time next week. Bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m.
The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.